Want to get your business in front of real sports fans? The Fade Route with D and Z reaches over 1,000 listeners every month. Are you ready to be part of the in crowd?
Yes!
Email us today. Hit us up at faderoutemail@gmail.com and find us on our socials at Fade Route Podcast. Time to run the go route. We'll talk to you next week.
T-minus 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coming at you from the AO Studios. It's the Fade Route with D and Z. Here are your hosts, D and Z.
Powered by Riverside FM.
Coming at you live from the AO Studio.
Ayo.
It's the Fade Route with D and Z. I am D. We've got a great show for you tonight.
Yeah,
Ken
we do.
Ken Scottabo decides to do a backflip. Red Sox are red hot. And the Yankees are not. But we'll begin today's show with the World Cup ended yesterday with Spain beating defending champs Argentina in extra time 1-0. Despite the 1-0 victory, Spain dominated the match. Double-digit shots on goal, while Argentina, I don't even know if they registered a shot on goal the whole game. What did you think of the match? How do you feel about Spain being true world champions?
So where do you start with this? The fact that in the beginning, the opening of the match, Spain really tried to jump out on Argentina. They put the pressure on early. They peppered Emi Martinez with some shots. They pressured the back line of the Argentinian defense. And for that first opening salvo, Argentina looked like they were a match. Right? They looked like they were able to hang with Spain. Now, as the match progressed, however, and it became abundantly clear that Argentina was not going to get quality chances, it felt like it was destined for extra time. Because while Spain was putting pressure, while Spain was able to generate opportunities, they weren't able to capitalize because Emi Martinez was playing like his hair was on fire. He has a World Cup final record for saves. So congratulations, Emi Martinez. You played your ass off. Now, you could tell that the tactics were changing on the fly. And you could see Argentina was getting frustrated because Argentina transitioned from, we're going to try to win this game, to we're just going to be annoying fucks and we're going to try and get you to retaliate. Whether it's playing to the whistle, playing through the whistle, shit talking, getting under your skin, pushing, shoving, elbows in the back. They were aiming to get a retaliation, to get a rise out of Spain. And Spain did not take the bait. Not one player took the bait. And then came Enzo Fernandez, who's already on a yellow because of dissent. Not for egregious play, not for a reckless challenge, because he couldn't keep his fucking mouth shut. That is why Enzo Fernandez was on a yellow. And then he had that hard, reckless challenge against Pau Cabarsi. And adios, muchacho. Like, there's no way around that. That was dangerous. You sent the kid flying. He did a somersault, and he landed hard. Like, you're done. You are done. And then in the scrum, Messi, of all people, decides to become Tom Petty. Like, it's amazing. Cucurella from Spain puts two fingers to his mouth, and then all of a sudden, Messi's hand goes up, and he's ratting, like he's trying to be a tattletale. Ooh, Mr. Ref, Mr. Official, he covered his mouth. That's a red card. Which, by the new laws of the World Cup, covering your mouth is a red card because of the prevalence of covering your mouth and saying racial epithets. Right? Which we saw one. Miguel Almiron got the heave-ho because he covered his mouth. And yeah, you can't do that. However, Cucurella did not cover his mouth. He only covered his mouth with two fingers, not the complete hand. So that's just petty for the sake of being petty. And 39 seconds in, that's all it took. 39 seconds into extra time, Fernand Torres from a beautiful back heel by Nico Williams. Bang, that's all she wrote. And then finally, Argentina is able to crack the code a little bit, but too little, too late, and they still couldn't get it through. You had a couple corner chances. Cholito, Giuliano Simeone, he's going to have nightmares about that shot off the corner, deflected right to him, served up on a silver platter, and just skying the net. So the chances were few and far between. Credit to Spain. Unai Simón, the Golden Glove, only allowed one goal the entire match. And how do you feel about Spain? You go wire to wire, only allowing one goal in the entire tournament? In seven matches? Right? You've played more matches than any team in World Cup history because of the expanded format. Maybe you start talking about asterisks here, but that is the most impressive performance to date in World Cup history. If you run through, a tournament allowing one goal and you have six clean sheets, yeah, that's total football, man. That is total dominance. And Spain has earned all the flowers it got, and Argentina is earning all the flack it's getting for its performance and its dud and that egg that they now need to sit on for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of say that whole sentiment that, like, this was the problem. This is the problem with soccer. You know what? It's a great game and it was a great tournament, and I'm not taking anything away from what happened the last month, but the final was a dud in my opinion. It was a dud in the sense that we didn't get an Argentina team that looked like they were playing to win. It looked like they were playing to tie, they were playing to go to PKs. And I get that kind of strategy, especially when you look at Spain and look at how ball dominant they are and look at how much of a good defense they had. But it's almost like you're playing scared. Like, that's not what we signed up for. That's not what all those people paid to go to MetLife Stadium to see. They want to see Messi get the ball for more than 20 touches. They want to see you on the attack. They want to see you trying to beat Spain, trying to defend your title, trying to win this game. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we got that. Now, listen, Argentina beat everybody who was in front of them. They won games late. And maybe that was what they were trying to do in this game. The plan was they would win late, maybe. But the idea is that I think England would have given a better game. It probably would have been 2-1, 3-1. But I think England would have been more of an attacking presence. They would have tried to, you know, try to score. And maybe we're just being naive to the fact that Spain was really that good. Maybe they were that great that they would have kept the ball away from anybody who they played against. I don't know. We'll never know. But I think...
Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. To go back to what you're saying about England and Argentina, when Argentina knocked off England, the reaction on the field, they looked like they shot their wad. Like, Argentina looked like they were spent. And they needed to expend all that energy to come back on England. So, Spain still had reserves in the tank. But Argentina definitely exerted more to get there. And it felt more like the pressure had been lifted off them at that point, and then they just became easy pickings for Spain. But there are going to be investigations about the post-match too, where you had Leandro Paredes, you had a coach, Roberto Ayala, punching Danny Olmo. You had Paredes attacking a player, like, there are ways, right? There are ways to win and there are ways to lose. And if you're going to lose, lose with dignity, lose with grace. You got beat. You got beat. You can't say you were cheated. You got straight up beat. So you win with grace, you lose with grace. And to go on and to go on and just be that piss poor of a sport, that's going to sit. That's going to stay with this team for a very long time. And they need to think about not just the talent. They need to think about character. Because Enzo Fernandez, this isn't his first time. He made the comment about the air quote French players when he was talking about the African diaspora. He was talking about how English, he has a home in London and all of his cleaning people are English. Like, he's a shit talker, but he's an asshole. It's like, don't be an asshole. You can be a competitor. You can be an irritant on the field without being an asshole. And I think sometimes the line is crossed so far that you can't even see the line anymore. And at the end of the match, it was one of those times.
Well, the other thing was is that Argentina was the only team in the World Cup that didn't have a VAR go against them.
Mm-hmm.
The referees were really on top of Spain, but in this final, they were also on top of Argentina. But if you remember last time when Argentina won the World Cup, it was like, refs seemed to be on their side. They took away one of Spain's goals, which, I mean, the guy was a hair offsides. If that Argentina player gets the ball and scores the goal in extra time to tie the game, and then it goes to extras and PKs and Argentina wins, I think we'd be talking a lot about that. So I'm kind of glad that Spain did win, because I think an Argentina win would have left a really weird taste in everybody's mouth. I mean, especially a team that gets no shots on goal, no shots in regular time, and then they wind up winning the game, winning the World Cup. That wouldn't have sat well with anybody in the swamps of Jersey.
But you're right about that, and that's why this particular tournament conditioned fans to wait for that, right?
Yeah.
How many goals were scored after the 75th minute? How many times had VAR intervened? How many times had there been a crucial penalty called? Like, this, it was refreshing that Ferran Torres put that one away,
Yeah.
And there was no VAR. There was no controversy about it. There was no handball. There was nothing. He just got beat clean.
Oh, if it wasn't for their goalie, they would have lost 5-0.
Oh, yeah. No, Emi Martinez was the star for Argentina. And yes. Yes, absolutely. Emi Martinez was completely the star, and he's earned all of that. But when you really look at it, like, Messi didn't have that much of an impact on this match. Right? He was doing his usual wandering about. He was having his walk in a park on Sunday. And, people are starting to get critical, like Carly Lloyd in particular. Like, she wanted to see more activity. It's the finals. It's the championship. Do a little bit more. There, I understand that you have to go back to Inter Miami, but you can leave it all on the field here. It's the World Cup final. Like, give it a little bit more. Give a little bit more.
It's his game. It's the way he plays. And let's not forget, he's a 39-year-old man. He's playing against some of the best athletes in the world. I'm going to give him a break on that. I don't think anybody expected them to really get to the final, and they did. And it was mainly because of him. I mean, so it's not like he's not talented. Spain had a chance. Spain had a defensive strategy to take him out of the game, and they did. It's fine. It's over. It was good. I watched it. I enjoyed it. I would have liked to see more of a battle from Argentina, but I appreciated the game, and it was well played and well won.
Elevate your protein game with Clear Whey protein powder. Lactose-free, sugar-free, and refreshingly delicious. Perfect for a flavorful protein-packed boost. That's Clear with a K. Go to clearprotein.com, enter promo code DNZ for 20% off any product. That's clearprotein.com. Clear with a K.
So during the World Cup, most of the games played in the United States were played in NFL stadiums, and FIFA demanded that every stadium have grass installed for all the games for the health of the players and competitive balance. NFL players are pleading with the NFL to institute the same policies for the regular season. So should the NFL outlaw turf and force teams to install grass in their stadiums?
So according to the NFLPA, players have a 28% higher rate of non-contact lower extremity injuries on turf compared to grass. And this study in particular breaks that down. 69% higher rate of foot and ankle injuries, and then 32% of that is knee injuries. Now, we've seen guys like Odell Beckham Jr., his leg exploding. We've seen guys like Malik Nabers. We've seen Scatterboo. We've seen the turf in Atlanta claim a bunch of ACLs. You know, we've seen what happens at MetLife. Oh, sorry, New York, New Jersey Stadium. Do we have to keep calling it that?
God, trash.
Jesus Christ. I know you don't want to give MetLife any money, but come on. Come on. But over the 2021 and 22 seasons, they showed that you were having almost 1.5 injuries per game on turf compared to 1.25 injuries on natural grass. Now, yeah, that doesn't sound like a lot, but that's still significant. The fact that there is an increase. Should there be more grass? I would hope that they would take this into some serious consideration. However, you have to start thinking about places like Atlanta or New Orleans. Like, what are you going to do? How are you going to make this work? Now, you did install grass in Atlanta for the World Cup. Okay, so, you know, the technology is such that it's there. But how are you going to retrofit this into existing stadiums already? I think that's a study that needs to be conducted. And if you have that information already, well, shit, why aren't you doing anything about it? So you are going to improve your product because you're going to have your best players available to you because they're not going to be on the sideline rehabbing a knee injury. And you will extend the careers of your skill position players. Right? You'll extend the career of your more high impact and highly regarded stars who rely on their legs, who rely on their quickness and their mobility, because you are going to be less likely to incur these kinds of injuries. So by all means, put grass in. Yes, it's a pain in the ass to maintain compared to turf, but guess what? It's going to benefit you in the long run.
Well, it all comes down to dollars and cents, right?
The whole thing is that
you're talking about just like from a football team perspective, but these owners have a lot more things going on in their stadium than football games, right? And by mm-hmm. having grass, you're not going to be able to do all those other things that you want to do. You know, unless you can roll out your field like they do in Vegas and like they do in Arizona, you're going to have to really maintain this turf. So mm-hmm. not only is it going to cost you a lot of money to maintain the grass, And then you're not going to be able to do all the events you want to do because you can't really bounce back if you have a concert on Saturday night and then you have a game on Sunday. Doesn't really work out so well. I think the players are serious about this. It all comes down to the CBA. What are you willing to give up to get this to happen? Right? Because the owners, I think, will be like, all right, you know what? If you want, you know, grass in old stadiums, split the cost with us 50-50. Take it out of revenue. And we'll pay for it. We'll do it. Right? The other thing is like, all right, we'll give you grass in old stadiums. Then you give us 18 games. You give us, you know, they're going to have to give up something if they really want it. It can be bargained for. I think the commissioner will be in the camp of, hey, you know, for you turf stadiums, hold on, you know, don't change over, don't give in. So like in the MetLife situation, don't give in to giving grass because this thing can be collectively bargained for. Don't just do it. Same thing for LA, you know, wherever there's turf, you know, I think the whole motto is going to be like, if they really want it, then we're going to either make them pay for it or we're going to bargain with them and get something in return. The question becomes, if you're a player, what works better for you? You're going to give up some of your revenue? You're going to give into an extra game? You're going to give into extra practices? What are you going to give into?
So that's where my mind immediately went. This is going to be how they get their 18-game schedule.
Possibly.
And is that a little bit of blackmail? Probably.
Not really, because like I said, you've got to think of, listen, we've been saying this for like, what, the last 30 years? It's a business. It costs a lot to upkeep the fields. All right. Not only does that, it's going to cost me being able to do other events there during the football season. So no, it's not just a slam dunk and, you know, I hire a couple extra gardeners and a couple landscapers and, you know, we'll and some chemicals. No. There's a lot more that goes into that, especially for draining, sunlight, everything. There's a lot more that goes into it. So, and it costs money. So, I personally don't see it happening because I don't think, as much as I think the players do want grass, I don't think they're willing to give up anything to get it. They're not willing to give up money, and they're certainly not willing to give up, you know, something they've collectively bargained for.
Yeah, but you know what? We were talking about the owners. Maybe some of these guys, you can leverage. Like, for example, let's look at it. The New Orleans Saints. They play in a dome. You can't do anything about this, right? So maybe this is the leverage you need to go back to New Orleans and say, hey, we want to get a new stadium. Okay, how about we try and do that?
I don't think people are so concerned with the dome teams. It's more of the teams that play outside and have the turf. I think people understand that the Minnesota Vikings are better served with a dome and better served with turf. I think in New Orleans, it's they've always played in a dome. Like that's not going to change. I think the concerns are more with like LA, New York, the Patriots, places like that, where it's like, well, you have an outdoor stadium, why do you have turf, right? You should have grass. Like, Green Bay has never had turf. They're never going to have turf, right? And I think Chicago's another one. They don't have turf. They're never going to have turf. Pittsburgh, right. You know, so it's more or less like, you know, getting all of the outdoor teams to have grass. And the indoor teams are the indoor teams. That's just what it is, you know? But we shall see.
Avoid messy accidents. Get better stopping power with your brake pads. Callahan brake pads. You never know when you'll be driving in the road and there will be a truck tire that you need to avoid and save your family. Callahan Auto. We really care about what's under your hood.
All right. The Dodgers, moving over to baseball. The Dodgers took 2 of 3 from the Yankees over the weekend. Cole gave up a bomb to Muncy on Friday to lose game one. Yamamoto pitched a complete game gem in game two. And the Yankees managed a 2-1 victory in game three thanks to late home run by Jazz Chisholm Jr. taking into consideration the Yankees do not have the majority of their players, should they be optimistic the way they perform this weekend against the Dodgers?
No.
No.
No. Next question. Moving on. No.
My answer's going to surprise you. I actually think they should be. I think they should be optimistic because they competed without Stanton. They completed without Freed, Rodon, and Judge. They won one game out of three, and they were in one of those. They were in one of the other games, not the first one.
The game that they won with Elmer Rodriguez on the mound. If they're in the World Series and you're starting Schlittler and Cole, you better win them. Those are the games you need to win.
Listen, I will say Cole was dealing. He was dealing. And, you know, everyone gets on Boone because he takes out people too early. He probably should have gotten Cole once he walked, you know, well, I forget who he walks, but he walked somebody in the months he got up. So I watched that game and I thought Cole was on. You could tell he was ready for this game. He wanted this game. He went out there and he did his damn best. And you know what? Muncy is a good hitter. There's no schlub. He's a great hitter and he got it. He got it. That's it. You know, it's a no doubter. As soon as he's off the bat, I was like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. doubter. The one thing they probably should be concerned about is Cam Schiller. They should be concerned with the way he pitched on Saturday, because that's the guy that's supposed to be the future. He's supposed to be your 1-2 punch. He's supposed to be the guy that'd be taking the game in game three, I would imagine. And that was a pretty poor showing by him, and he's kind of been up and down in his last couple of starts.
Yeah, so he's definitely been erratic lately, and you wonder if he's starting to hit a little bit of a wall. 3 earned runs, 6 hits, 4 in a third innings, 8 strikeouts. He throws hard. Yes, he throws hard. The problem is, as we know, and what we saw when we went to the game, teams can hit the fastball.
If you don't move.
Right. And if it's straight as a string, like it has been, that's when you get tattooed. Now, when he incorporates his secondary pitches, which his curveball is decent on, you know, on occasion, it's very good. When he incorporates his secondary pitches more, and actually pitches rather than throws, he's way more effective. But that's most pitchers. When you actually pitch instead of throwing, that becomes an issue. Now, with Cole, he did his best David Cone impersonation. I got enough left for one more hitter, and bang! Yeah. So it was like a Halloween costume. Cole was David Cone, and Boone was Buck Showalter. For Yankee fans of a certain age, you remember this against Seattle. I'm good.
You got this.
I got this. And next thing you know, it's the extra innings, and Jack McDowell gives up the game-winning hit to Edgar Martinez. So there's that. But if you're looking at this, right, there's very little teeth in this order. Like, yeah, you have Ben Rice, but Chisholm 1-for-3, Grisham 1-for-4.
He hit a home run. He hit a home run Saturday, right?
He hit the game-winning home run on Sunday.
Oh, Sunday.
Yeah, but when you're looking at it, Dominguez 0-for-4, Bellinger 0-for-3. You have to start Max Schumann. Max Schumann is 0-for-3. McMahon is 0-for-3. Ali Sanchez has to start on this team. Yeah, that's a failure on Austin Wells. So,
all right. Well, we're hitting the All-Star break. So should they be buyers or sellers?
They need to be buyers. They're a game and a half out of the Eastern Division. They're in a wild card spot. They need to buy. And what do they need to buy in particular? They need to buy pitching. They need to buy an outfielder, and they need to buy a catcher, particularly a right-handed catcher. Now, Hunter Goodman is available from the Rockies. You want to get burned by the Rockies again? You got burned by Brian McMahon. Dude can't hit. Like, very good with a glove.
Didn't Tulowitzki play for the Yankees at one time?
After he washed out with Toronto because of all the injuries. But there's a desperate need in the Bronx, right? You can't you can't do the same shit you've been doing, which is, oh, we got Rodon back, we got Freed back. It's like making a trade. It's, oh, we got Giancarlo Stanton back. He can bend his elbows. It's like making a trade.
He can open a bag of Frito-Lay.
He can open up a bag of Lay's. You know, we get Aaron Judge back. We finally figured out what the hell's wrong with him. You know, it's like making a trade. Like, no, no. You have to act as if these motherfuckers aren't coming back. Like, you need to go full Steinbrenner on this. Live up to your last name, goddammit, and go get help. Go get Trout. Go get, if you want to go get Goodman, go get Goodman. Go get Salvi Perez. Go get reinforcements. You can get Rafael Devers. You can get Luis Arraez. These guys are available. Go get them. Because you know who will try and get them? The team that just beat your ass. The team that's going to destroy baseball. Thanos is going to get these guys. The Thanos of, it is inevitable. Yes, it is inevitable. And you got to do something because the Red Sox are behind you. The Rays are in front of you. And you can't just rest on your laurels and say, oh, we'll be there at the end. Because if you rest on your laurels, you will get beaten. And let's take this into account. The Yankees' home record is 23-22.
Solid.
It's not the home field advantage it used to be. The ghosts did not follow the team across the street. 23-22. That is it, and that is all.
Love it.
You like fishing?
How about the outdoors? If you do, then Pinche Gringo is the lifestyle apparel brand for you. Built around the outdoors and not taking things too seriously, Pinche Gringo makes everyday shirts for guys and gals who live outdoors. Comfortable, wearable, and just interesting enough to get noticed. Go to pinchegringo.org, enter the promo code DNZ, and get an exclusive 15% off discount on any product. That's pinchegringo.org. Enter the promo code DNZ for an exclusive 15% off. That's pinchegringo.org.
Love it. Well, speaking of the Red Sox, the losses coming out of the All-Star break by the Rays and the Yankees have allowed Boston to get back into the pennant race. They are currently on a 13-game win streak, which is, I believe, their second best all-time for their franchise. And they're only about 6 games back. So can Boston make a run at this thing?
Well, can you expect? They're 15-48 right now.
Yeah, they 6 games back.
They dug out of that hole. They're
in the wild card spot.
They were dead in the fucking water.
They certainly were.
And they fired Alex Cora.
Yeah.
And then
that guy.
They dug out of it, right? You're getting all-star performances from Sonny Gray, right? You're getting Wilson Contreras' contributions. You're getting Willier Abreu, who's equatorially hot right now, right? They could probably use another outfielder. So maybe you want to beat them to Mike Trout if you're the Yankees. Mike Trout and Fenway? Sign me up. Sign me the fuck up for that. What's it going to cost? I don't know, but sign me up for that.
So Boston should be buyers.
Boston should be buyers. Wow. Boston should be buyers.
Boston is buyers. Yankees are buyers. Are the Rays buyers?
The Rays work on a budget. That's the thing. The Rays will. That's the thing. They'll get a DFA guy and they'll turn him into Nolan Ryan. Kodai Senga will win 20 games for the Rays. He stinks, and he will win 20 games for the Rays because it's how they roll. It's just what they do. But the Red Sox are absolutely able, because of their pitching and because of their veteran presence in the order, they can make a run. And they're doing this without Roman Anthony. They're doing this without their stud
player. They're doing it without Crochet, too. I believe they're fourth best in the league.
Yeah.
In ERA.
Yeah. Like, they're getting the performances they need to. Right? You're getting... You're getting what the Yankees were hoping they would get in the absence of Freed and Rodon. And they probably need a little bit more in the rotation. Maybe they jump in the Scooble sweepstakes. But maybe they have the prospects to pull it off. I don't know. But you got to be willing to try, right? You have to be willing to make a run in this thing because you're showing your capability, right? You're showing that you're not going anywhere. You keep it up, you build on this, and who knows? You're 6 games behind the Rays. Could you kind of inch back into this a little bit more? Could the Yankees go on a cool, could they go on a cold streak? Sure. That's baseball. Could the Rays kind of slip back to the pack? Yeah, why not? Anything is possible. Keep playing your game and add strategically, provided that it doesn't destroy your team for years to come. And you can absolutely make a run. You absolutely can make some noise. Because, like we said, how many teams are actually good in the American League? How many teams are actually over 500? Four?
The White Sox are in first place. That's some wild shit.
That's all you friggin' need to know. The White Sox are in first place. We had them picked for dead ass fucking last.
The Tampa Bay Rays have the best record in the American League.
The Tigers were supposed to cruise in the American League Central, rather. And the Tigers have been dreadful. The Royals have been injured all year.
Houston, 7 games under 500.
Houston stinks. The Mariners are mediocre at best. Maybe they're going to get Eugenio Suarez back from the Reds.
Eugenio!
But why not the Red Sox? It's wide open. The American League is wide friggin' open right now.
Plus 46 win differential, which is actually second best in the American League.
The Red Sox have, they can do some funny shit right here. They can really,
that's wild. They have the second best run. Second best run differential. White Sox plus 45. I mean, listen, I think in the American League, yes, they have a chance. They're going to have to stay hot, though, right? They're going to have to win these divisional games that they have coming up against the Yankees and the Rays, and they just finished sweeping the Rays. You would assume, you'd assume Sonny Gray keeps going. It's unbelievable how well he's pitching. Aroldis Chapman closes the door. They got young guys that can hit, and they're not reliant on the home run. Most of the Yankees' runs are coming off of home runs. They hit the ball all over the park. They're a good baseball team. As far as making the playoffs, yep, I think they can make the playoffs. I don't think they can win the World Series. I don't think they can get to the World Series, but they can certainly get into the playoffs.
Now, what moves do they have to make in order to make this team better? Where do they need to shore up their roster?
Yeah, so for me, I'm not a buyer. I'm not a seller. I'm going to roll with what I got. They unloaded last year, right? They unloaded Devers, and then they went in and brought in Suarez, and things really weren't going that well earlier in the year. And you don't want false hope. And I know I talk about this a lot, but a couple of years ago, the Mets had false hope, man. They made the wild card in a year where they were dog shit and they shouldn't have. In a year they should have sold, they didn't sell because they thought they had a chance. And now that franchise has been set back for 4 or 5 years. So if I'm Boston, I'm sitting pretty. We're hot. I'm going to stay hot. I'll listen to what people have to say. Imagine if they brought Devers back. That'd be hilarious. And Scoble, I don't think that's the answer. I think if anything, they need a bat, right? They probably need a bat somewhere. And I don't know if there's a real bat out there that I'm going to go and give all my money to, right? Maybe Tatis Jr. would be interesting, but Mike Trout sounds interesting.
They should upgrade a catcher, though, because you're looking at Connor Wong, 276, one homer, 15 ribbies.
And I don't know if Mike Trout could play in Boston, man. I don't know if you're going to leave LA and go play in Boston. I don't know if that's going to work out.
Hey, you know what? Mike Trout could actually play in a playoff game.
I don't think he cares about that. That's the other thing. You're going to bring him in and you're going to bring his fucking lazy ass lackadaisical attitude. Nah, that's okay, dude. You ride out your... What he's going to the Hall of Fame, Z. He has nothing to prove to anybody. Like, he doesn't have to win a World Series. He doesn't have to play in a playoff game. He's going to the Hall of Fame. He's got MVP awards. He's going to be the best Angel ever. They're going to retire his number. Why bother?
Best Angel ever.
So he can go to the World Series and get struck out by Shohei Ohtani? No. No. No thanks. That's not his makeup. That's not who he is. Right? He knows what he is. He's Kevin Durant. He knows what he is. Right? And he's not...
Kevin Durant has a ring.
What?
Kevin Durant has a ring.
Right. Right, but why? Kevin Durant knew who he was, and he knew to win a ring, he was going to have to go somewhere else. And this is a guy who doesn't want to go anywhere else. He likes his life in California, even though he's an East Coast kid. I think he has Eagles season tickets too, which is even more bizarre. But
right,
that's who he is.
So if they're not going to go after Trout, then I think Salvi Perez is definitely the upgrade that they need to make. Then you're looking. I know
for
they're
what,
tied
Z, up- for what? What does Salvi Perez give them? Gets them a playoff berth. What is adding Salvi Perez do for the Boston Red Sox?
You can win a round with this team. You can get to the second round of the playoffs.
And then
there's
what?
Absolute. And then you're in the second round of the playoffs. Anything can happen.
Like
right?
What?
You actually could knock off a team that has had a bye that is rusty. Yeah, yes, last year that didn't happen. But in previous years, it has happened.
Can the Boston Red Sox win the World Series?
As presently constituted, no. They need more. They need more.
Can Salvi Perez help them win a World Series? Is Salvi Perez going to help them beat the Dodgers, the Braves, or the Phillies?
Yes, he could. He's a veteran presence. He's got a good bat. And he's a good defensive catcher.
Each American League team is going to get swept this year, regardless of what team gets there.
Yeah, I don't. They.
Yeah, that kind of stuck you, right? You're like, wait a minute. That's
no,
possible.
No. Let's see. The Mariners could take a game because of their pitching. The Mariners could take a game. The White Sox, no. I don't believe in the White Sox. The Guardians, no. The Yankees, no. The Rays. The Rays might give them the best opportunity. The Rays might take two games. All right? The Red Sox, as presently constituted, that's a sweep.
But with Salvi Perez, they get a game?
With Salvi Perez and more additions. It's not just him. One player is not going to do this. You need to add more.
But the thing is, he's like, let's not get... I think it's wonderful that they've won 13 games in a row. It's fantastic. Very happy for their franchise. But let's not get hung up on how bad this team was in the beginning of the season and how bad they really are, right? Just as easily as they've won 13 games, they could lose 13 games. They could lose 10 games. They could lose 9 games. And as good as Salvi Perez is, I don't think he can prevent that or keep that going. So that's why I'm trying to argue for just stay the course, man. Like, why are you going to mess up with what's been working? In the ebbs of the flows of this league, we're going to win a lot of games. We're going to lose a lot of games. Let's try to be there in the end. Why are we going to sacrifice our future to lose to the Dodgers in the World Series? To get beat by the Yankees in the first round.
Realistically, what do you think? Hang on, time out. Realistically, what do you think it's going to cost to get a 36-year-old catcher?
I don't know. But I know if I'm the Royals, I'm not just giving him up. I do want the sun, the moon, and the stars because you need him. He's mine, and you need him. And you know what? You're not the only team calling for him. So it's not going to be just like, oh, just some bullshit. No. I want good prospects. He's the best player. He's the second best player in our franchise right now. So, no, I'm not just going to give him away for a ham sandwich. I'll ride him out. I'll keep him here. I'll fucking come in last. I don't give a shit. It's no skid off my rear end. So that's what I'm trying to say. Like, why would I deal with that? Now, if you want to go and talk about Schubel.
You, as the Royals, your window has completely slammed shut. after two winning seasons. It's completely slammed shut, and your franchise now looks terrible, right? Waka, Lugo, like those guys are your assets, and that will get you back to where you want to go. Because maybe Bobby Witt Jr. isn't Mike Trout. Maybe he's not happy in Missouri. Maybe he's not just not satisfied being there. Because Bobby Witt Jr. is your best player, right? So you want to keep him happy. And how do you keep players like that happy? You put winning products on the field. So maybe that gets you a prospect. Maybe you put him together with Michael Waka and you get something a little bit better. Right? Maybe you put him with Seth Lugo and you get something a little bit better. That's how you're going to get back to the mountaintop. You can't bank on the fact that, oh, this is an injury blip.
We do it for the Royals?
We're
going to play Kansas City Royals baseball. We're going to scout players. We're going to develop players. And we're going to turn them into Kansas City Royals. That's what my motto is if I'm in Kansas City. It was in Oakland, the same model that's in all these small marketplaces.
But you didn't. You turned Beltran into a Yankee. You turned Johnny Damon into an A, into a Red Sox, and eventually into a Yankee. You turned Jermaine Dye into an Oakland A.
That's why if I'm giving up Salvador Perez, I'm getting the talent in your prospect pool. I'm not taking a reliever who's 32. I'm taking young guys that have promise. I'm taking your top 100, your top 30, your top 35. That's what I'm taking. And if you don't like that, that's fine. There are two other people on the line that might. And if you're the Yankees or the Red Sox or another team that's looking for a catcher, you don't know how desperate the other team is. And I would like to think that if I'm the Red Sox, I think the Yankees are much more desperate than I am. Would you agree with that?
How desperate are we talking? Are we talking about Spencer Jones desperate?
I don't know.
Are we talking Lombard desperate?
I'm just trying to say that the Yankees are in a situation where they have Aaron Judge, who they don't know when he's coming back. That seems correct to be what's going on. Their other good hitter can't open a bag of potato chips.
No.
We don't even talk about Max Fried anymore. Luis Gil is back on the injured list. Rodon is hurt. Okay? The Red Sox traded their best player last year. Okay? They fired their manager in the beginning of the season. There was no expectations here. Right? If they wind up making the playoffs, great. If they wind up getting to the World Series, wonderful. But I don't think anybody in Boston expects the Red Sox to make the playoffs or to do anything this year. But the Yankees are a desperate team. So if I'm the Royals, right, and the Yankees are calling me, I'm telling them Boston's calling me too. This guy's calling me too. So, yeah, it's going to cost you. You're going to have to give up X, Y, and Z. And if not, that's cool. I got other suitors. So the same thing can happen with the Red Sox making the call. I've got the Yankees on the line. You know how bad they are. And they're in your division. So this is what I want from you.
Mm-hmm. I also know that bullshit. I also know that bullshit because I know Brian Cashman. You're lying.
I'm just saying you get caught up in this, and where if you just understand what you're doing and understand your team and understand that I'm winning with what I have right now. And I'm not supposed to be winning. I'm going to ride this wave. And the Yankees are losing. They're struggling. They're in trouble. They need it more than ever. And if I'm the Royals, I'm holding out for that phone call. And I'm going to rob them.
You're not going to get it. And this is what I'm trying to get through to you. The Yankees don't make that call anymore. They don't do it. Spencer Jones is going to rot in Scranton. George Lombard is going to be in Hudson Valley for the next 2 years. They're going to hug him.
Spencer Jones is going to be a Padre.
For what?
Mason Miller.
Not going to happen. Because that's what the Yankees need. Another goddamn reliever. Another goddamn reliever.
I wouldn't be surprised if they move Bedard. because I don't think he's that ever watching him. I know he got Ohtani out, but I was like, man, he is sweating.
Bednar's an adventure. Doval's an adventure. The best thing they could do is call the Mets and get Weaver back, because Weaver has done it.
Which I'm sure that's going to happen.
Yeah, make that call. That's the something you need to do. But the prospects that you want, if you're the Royals, you ain't getting them. Maybe you can get 10 to 15. Maybe you can get in that range, but you're not going to get you're not going to get the top flight guys. You may get Elmer Rodriguez, right? I believe he's number 4 or 5. He's somewhere in the top 10, but he's not Spencer Jones. He's not LaGrange. He's not Lombard. So you can't hold out for those names, right? And then think about what the Red Sox did. Yeah, they traded Devers, but then they turned around and they traded Harrison, who they got for Devers. They traded him for Monasterio. They traded him for Durbin. They did a pretty good job, and Harrison's been good for the Brewers. So that was an old-fashioned baseball trade that seems to be working out pretty decently. So, yeah, the Red Sox might ask for some top-level talent, but know what the asset is.
We shall see.
Hypernatural, the best men's polo shirts of 2024 as voted by Men's Journal. Hypernatural offers polos, tees, and button-ups that deliver an unmatched comfort and style, featuring Hypercool Jade technology for natural cooling. Enjoy an exclusive discount with my promo code DANDZ, and that could be used at hypernaturalstyle.com.
Well, talking about assets, Adam Silver seems to have outlined who his number one asset is.
Asset or asses? What was that?
The NBA commissioner announced that the NBA schedule release is on hold. Why, you ask? The commissioner admitted he cannot release the schedule until LeBron James announces where he will play next season. Last I checked, Adam Silver works for the owners. So how should owners, fans, players, and staff feel about the commissioner's comments?
Adam, I need you to pee in this cup. I need you to be drug tested.
We're waiting for who? Who needs
right. to? Right, we're waiting who? For 43-year-old LeBron James.
To tell That's us where he's going?
We're waiting for the decision part 3. Right. I see that. How should owners feel about this? They should be furious, right? How are you supposed to promote games? How are you supposed to do any of this if it's all on hold? How are you supposed to how are you supposed to get your season ticket licenses? How are you supposed to get any of this going? Your promotions department is nil because you don't know if you're playing on Christmas. You don't know if you're playing on MLK Day. You don't know what the hell is going on, right? So you can put the bite on your season ticket holders just yet. That time will come. But it shows you that Adam Silver really thinks that this is a one man above the rest of the league type deal. Right? That shows you kind of where he is and how he's kowtowing.
It's just very strange. It's very strange to me, Z, because we've had in the last 5 years what we've seen the Knicks win the championship. We've seen the Oklahoma City Thunder win the championship. We've seen the Joker win the championship. Yep. But we're concerned with where LeBron James is going to sign next season. That just Mr. seems Bubble like champion. You don't have a pulse on what the future of this league is. We're likely heading into LeBron's last season. Correct. So why are we so concerned with where he is going to play?
Because for that very reason, is this going to be a retirement tour? And if it's a retirement tour, then we need to plan accordingly. LeBron must get his ass kissed in every single market. We must get the gifts ready. We must get the dog and pony show ready because it's LeBron's last season, maybe. Right? This is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous that the league would kowtow to this player at this point in time. if this was when he made the decision the first time, okay, maybe I can understand that. He's in his prime. But now? No, not now. Not for a 42-year-old. Not for a guy who's on his last leg. That is completely short-sighted. And it really is a slap in the face to the other players who,
like, yeah, you think about it, like, I'm sure the Knicks don't care, but if you're the Knicks, like, you're like, what? Like, we just had like the best championship. And Wembanyama, another guy, like, I'm supposed to be the future of the league. The Knicks playing the Spurs should be on Christmas Day, right? Or the Thunder playing the Spurs should be on Christmas Day, right? Like, we should be highlighting the future. We shouldn't be worried about the past. The past tour will take care of itself, right? Regardless of where he goes and where he signs. Let's say he goes to Golden State, okay? Wherever he plays on whatever day, it's going to get eyeballs. It's going to get views. We're not worried about that. You should be trying to showcase your newest players, the guys who are going to be pushing this league forward. You know, and LeBron gave us 19 years, I believe, of playing on Christmas Day. Thanks, LeBron. It's been swell. But I really want to see, Antetokounmpo and the Heat go against the Joker and the Nuggets. Like, I want to see, because what are we going to get? We might get a situation where LeBron is hurt on Christmas. Or LeBron's not able to play on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. He's 42 years old. I hurt my shoulder today pretending to throw. Just saying. And if your staff, like, you know, the staff have to plan out their vacations and what they're doing accordingly. If your other players, you're trying to figure out what your Christmas plans and what your Thanksgiving plans will be. And because LeBron James is choosing to join another team, I've got to wait for LeBron at 42 years old to figure out where he's going to sign. That's going to dictate how I spend my vacations. What if you're the New York Knicks? If you're their owner,
yep.
Dolan, what? Why? Well, LeBron doesn't play for my team. Why does that affect me? How is this affecting me? I just think it's very.
If you're a member of the NBA Players Association, it tells you my league doesn't give a fuck about me.
Right.
Plain and simple, they don't give a fuck about you. And they should, because there's a lot of talent.
But like, there is.
On Christmas Day.
Like,
wouldn't you want to see Philly Boston, Jaylen Brown's return to Boston? Wouldn't you want to see that?
Right.
Wouldn't that be intriguing?
Sure. There's a lot of things.
So
there are a lot of different things you can do. But I'm just trying to say, like, to put this all on the shoulders of one player. When there's so many other talented players in the league, and it's not even a player, like, maybe I can understand this like 10 years ago, right? Like when he's 32, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, all right, yeah, let's kind of wait and see where he's going, because I don't know where he's going to go. Now we kind of have an idea of the places he's going to go. Is it really going to change much? I mean, the places he's planning on going, they're already jacked up rosters. So you can put those guys in prime time. I just think it's a shit look for the NBA, but they love that shit, right?
It's a shit look for LeBron too, because
I don't know if he is. I mean, what he's doing is ridiculous, but this is a guy.
That's the thing, right? But that's the thing, though. He's pulling the Aaron Rodgers bullshit.
Yeah.
And if we call Aaron Rodgers to account for it, we have to call LeBron James to account for it.
True. I agree with that, Tyler. I agree with the comment.
Big Fork Brands brings bold bacon sausage, paleo pork jerky, and Chicago-style sauces to your table. Enjoy rich, smoky flavors made with sustainable ingredients and chef-crafted care. Enjoy an exclusive 20% discount with our promo code DNZ. Find them at BigForkBrands.com. That's 20% off using our promo code DNZ at BigForkBrands.com.
And speaking about holding people accountable,
this fucking guy,
New York Giants running back Cam Scatabo, who missed the majority of the games last season to a dislocated ankle, decided it was a good idea to perform a backflip at an event last week, which was caught on video and posted on social media. When he tries to complete the backflip, the ground that he's jumping on is springy, which causes it to reverberate when he hits it, and he falls down. Likely could have hurt himself again. So if you're the Maras or your coach Harbaugh, what do you do about your starting running back?
This fucking guy. What have we said routinely on this show about Cam Scataboo? He's not long for this league. This man is like walking CTE.
I think that was actually his response to it. He's like, if you want to call me dumb, you can call me dumb. It's who I am.
Yeah, it's who you are. You're recovering from surgery to repair a dislocated ankle and a fractured leg, and I'm going to do a backflip and not nail the backflip and possibly hurt myself again on a team that has promise, right? There are a couple of breaks last year, a couple of breaks here, a couple of breaks there. They're an 8-win team. Say what you will about the Giants, right? You bring in a guy like Harbaugh. Harbaugh can't be too happy about this. He can't be too happy about what's going on. John Mara can't be too happy about what's going on. You call in Scataboo into your office and you say, Cam, have a seat.
We're going to release you.
It's that, it's that rectangular thing over there. You do one more stupid fucking thing and we deactivate you. We're not going to release you. We're going to put you on conduct detrimental to the team. Why? Because you're a fucking moron. You cannot be trusted to not do the simplest of things, like protect yourself. You are an asset. You are vital to the success of this team. And if you're going to do dumb shit, we're going to protect you from yourself. You may not like that, but it's a lesson that you're going to have to learn. Which means you're going to lose playing time to Tyrone Tracy, for starters. You're not RB1 anymore. If you keep doing stupid shit, then we really need to start thinking about your future here. Because it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd that this guy is going to do something so reckless coming off of that injury. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. If I'm John Harbaugh and I saw that, like, my blood vessel would be coming out of my fucking neck. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, I just, I think it's one of those things that when you're a good franchise and you're doing well, you kind of laugh at it. But when you're a bad franchise, it's like, you got to go, dude. Like, so I just think this is a situation where, you know, it can be funny for now. But if it's continued behavior, it's like, you can't stay here, man. Like, that's just the way it is. You're the New York Giants. Like, you don't tolerate this stuff.
No.
And I'm kind of surprised that they drafted him and that he's just doesn't get it yet. I understand he's a young kid and young kids do stupid things and he wants to have fun and all, but, you know, we're trying to win games here. And I think he actually played well enough last year where he could be a legit starting running back in this league, shockingly enough. This game against the Eagles before he got hurt, he was pretty impressive. And, you know, I don't want to, I'm not going to call a guy dumb. I feel bad he said that about himself, but you just, you're coming off of a dislocated ankle, man. You shouldn't be jumping off a boat. You shouldn't be riding motorcycles. You shouldn't be doing jet skis. You shouldn't be doing anything stupid. You should be getting ready for the NFL season. And you're just coming off an injury. And I think the most important thing is to take care of yourself and take care of your body. Show people that you're committed to winning and committed to being a New York Giant. You want to play games like that? You want to do that shit? You can go play for the Cardinals. You can go play for the Dolphins. You play for some shit franchise. But for a new, if you're the New York Football Giants, that's not acceptable.
It's completely unacceptable. And you know what? At Arizona State, my man was headbutting walls.
Yeah.
So this is who he is. And the Giants knew this when they drafted him. Now, you draft him because you think he's colorful. He has energy. And he's the kind of guy who's going to run through a wall for you. You think he's going to be a culture guy. He's a culture guy until he goes off the rails. It's all fun and games till somebody gets hurt. And wouldn't you fucking know, he got hurt last year. Mm. So maybe you tone it down a notch when you're not between the lines. When you're between the lines, I want that. I want the guy who's going to, you know, run through a brick wall, right? For 60 minutes, I want you to give me the best you got. Run through the linebacker, hurdle over a guy, you know, pancake a linebacker coming in for a blitz. Do that within the context of a football game. That was in the context of promoting yourself. And that's going to write checks that your ass can't cash here. You'll catch on someplace else. 100% you will. Because they'll see the talent. And they'll think, I can fix him. Or I can put guardrails in place that can protect him from himself. Little do they know that that's almost never the case.
Elevate your coffee routine with Strong Coffee Company's Black Instant Blend and Lattes. Both feature organic coffee, protein, MCTs, and adaptogens for sustained energy and mental clarity. You can use our discount, DANDZ, and you can use that code at strongcoffeecompany.com.
It's the In Route, where friends of the show get a special segment with us. Want to be part of the action? Want to be the newest member of the In Crowd? Well, you know what to do. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com, or slide in our DMs on IG at faderoutepodcast, or drop us a line on X at faderoutednz, and you could be next.
All right, joining us on the In Route today, we have former San Diego State, Frankfurt Galaxy wide receiver and writer of the new wedding song, Here Comes Forever, A Bride's Walk, Robert Ortiz. Robert, thanks for coming on, man.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure, man. Pleasure and honor. It's been almost 20 years since
almost 20 we years. Hung out. Also the guy that purchased my first ticket to a Beyonce concert, which was awesome.
Yes.
That sounds like there's a story there.
We went to Beyonce in Frankfurt.
That's right. That was awesome. You were nice enough and gracious enough to get me my ticket. That was great. First and last time I ever saw her. So awesome. Great experience.
Nice.
All right.
Probably my last time too.
Oh, really? It was your last time too? Yeah.
I mean, I watched her obviously on TV.
Of course.
Live.
Yeah, I mean, she was like right there. I mean, we were in a small venue. She was very close to us. It was awesome. Yeah. You know, that was a great experience. I appreciate that. It was awesome. So let's jump right into it. So you've gone from competing at the highest level to coaching kids in flag football. So what football lesson do you find yourself teaching over and over that has nothing to do with catching cat passes or running routes?
It's funny that you asked that question because I've been repeating a phrase to my own children and to my team, and even I've said it to a couple of my friends around. And honestly, it's been the last 3 weeks I've been saying it. You got to believe before you achieve, and it came out of my mouth after one of our tough games. We had lost to really a better team, and they were actually the national champs last year in our age group.
Wow.
in the United States. So we got whooped, but One thing I noticed is that from the game before, because it was a tournament, the game before that, they had confidence going in. They knew they were going to, you know, they were going to do pretty well. And then they knew this team was good. So their attitude and their energy and their effort was just a little bit different. And I'm like, you have to believe that you can win before you can actually win. And, you know, I said, you got to believe before you achieve it. And I just been running with that for the last few weeks. And honestly, I truly believe that, you know, if you believe it here first, you know, then you'll figure out. It doesn't matter what you're trying to do. You will figure it out, whether it's playing football or it's making music.
Yeah, kind of like the
So what do you think that is? Why do you think that is with this particular generation? Why do they need so much mental scaffolding for that?
I don't want to do that. I don't know if it's just this generation. I think people, human nature.
It is.
Human
That's a softball
nature,
coach. It
period.
Is, dude.
No, human nature, period. No, because I can't say that because I know a lot of people that are my age that haven't done things that they've always wanted to do. And they just, you know, it hasn't, you know, they haven't made that step towards it because they don't believe it yet. So I don't know if it's necessarily that a generation thing. I think, well, actually, I take that back. You know what it is? The generation that is having this generation is giving them that. So it's on us. It's on us, you know? And we have to teach, as coaches, we got to teach the kids something different. We got to teach them to be greater than they even think they are.
Well said. Well said. So flag football is rapidly growing, especially with its Olympic future. So what excites you the most about the next generation, and what today's young athletes do differently than when you were growing up?
So I was just talking about this the other day. I said, like, right now with flag football, it's all mostly, or at least in the girl, you know, because I coach girls, so in the girl arena, it's mostly soccer players that are athletic. And, you know, and they're just doing this as another sport. It's not really their main sport, right? But there are, my daughter's age is 10, 11. So in that age group, I'm finding that there are a lot of girls that are strictly flag football. So I'm excited about what we're going to see, you know, moving forward in the future, like, where they're going to be at in 4 or 5 years after they're not playing 100% soccer and then just doing flag football when they have time, like when they're fully immersed and focused on flag football and then maybe playing a little bit of soccer on the side, you know, like that's what I'm going to be excited about. I think one of the things that this next generation has that we didn't have is they have access to YouTube. So they can see so many things that we could only imagine we could see, you know, like, oh, I wonder what, you know, whoever, well, you know, I wonder what Tom Brady's doing right now. You know, you can see from this past weekend, he was at the Fanatics thing and he was doing all kinds of cool stuff, you know? And I think with that also, they have a little bit more access. With Fanatic stuff like that, or you know, there's just so much stuff that our children have access to now that we didn't have, that we kind of only could see on Sundays, or we can only see when the game is happening. But with YouTube, you can see what they're doing in their training. You can see who's training them. You can see other people that are doing the same training, and then you can apply it to your life and hopefully be, you know, better than they are.
Yeah, I feel like you can get instant feedback too, right? You could like video yourself, see what you're doing right, see what you're doing wrong, do it over again.
That too.
So is that the age group you're teaching right now? Is 10, 11 year olds?
10, 11, yeah.
And now your daughter, does she do only flag, or is she a soccer player that also does flag?
She's actually the type that I'm describing. She's 100% soccer, and then she plays flag football on the side, but she would prefer this is the hypocrisy. she would prefer to play mostly flag, but one, she told me one thing after a tough game, tough soccer game. She didn't play very well, and I was kind of on top of her, like, hey, we gotta this, that, and whatever. And she goes, well, I don't want to play soccer no more. I just want to play flag. And I go, all right, well, if you want to play flag, I said, we got to figure out something you can do for a job when you get older. She said, why? I said, because you said you wanted to be a professional athlete. I said, right now, I don't see no record of professional anything for flag football. There's opportunities, and maybe you might, your generation might be the pioneers of that league or that profession. But do you really want to bank all of your future and all that on that? I said, we still need to stick to soccer. So I'm hoping that there is some kind of league or something that does start up with the Olympics. It should help with all the different tournaments around the world that are happening right now for kids and the youth and teenagers. I think it will get there. But even then, we had to look up. I was like, for women's sports, tennis, soccer, basketball, and
golf.
You know, those are like the four that you can support yourself doing, right?
Yeah.
And I said, let's look at when the WNBA started. It was in 97. I said, they are just now being able to support themselves. Mm-hmm. That's almost, you know, whatever, 20, 30 years, you know, later. So I just said, look, I hope that it gets there for you. But at this point, we got to stick to soccer. If that's what you want to do, if you want to be a professional athlete, that's what you got to do.
Yeah, it could start with her. Who knows? But a bonus question. Yeah. What skill in soccer really for girls does translate to the best to playing flag?
Well, look, I'll go back to my Patriots days. Wes Welker and Randy Moss, they would practice with our MLS, the Revolution out there in Boston. They would practice with their team. They used our same facilities. They would practice with them. And Randy always used to say, like, I played soccer all my life. This is what got me my footwork.
Wow.
So the footwork, honestly, I think is the main thing that transitions. Because you're moving in and out of people, you're actually dribbling a ball at the same time. Then you got to stop, not only stop your body, but stop the ball and bring it back. You know, so it's a lot of good stuff within soccer that can help on the football field.
Okay, cool. So you spent time in camp with the Chargers, Patriots, 49ers. You spent time with those teams. So talk to us about how you would get ready for an NFL camp, and what were things that happened in camp that you just weren't ready for as camps are getting ready to open up all over the U.S.?
Some of the things that I did, you know, to train and get prepared for the season. I mean, it was a lot of track work, footwork, you know, and then obviously you do your, I'd work on my wide receiver stuff. But honestly, the main thing, and this is what I tell people all the time, the main thing that I thought was the toughest part about all of it was the mental part of it. The playbooks are so vast and like just you have especially for the Patriots offense, like actually that was probably the easiest offense for me. I sucked at the West Coast offense. Like, If I could go back in time,
yeah,
I would focus on the teams that used the Patriots offense, which back then was like the Jets.
Yeah.
I think the Browns maybe at that time. There was like a handful that are Giants. I think they did too.
Yep.
So I would have definitely preferred that offense. And the majority of the teams I was with was the West Coast offense. But it was just a lot, you know. And one thing I just tell athletes now is that if you can figure it out from the neck up, you know, like, just it's all here. The physical is going to get easier. You know, it gets easier for you because the game slows down once you know everything up here.
Yeah.
So I think that was probably the toughest part.
Gotcha.
So you've shared practice fields with some incredible players and coaches. But is there one moment, whether a catch, a conversation, a piece of advice, maybe something negative that impacted you? What still sticks with you all these years later?
I have a few of those. And I'll let you choose. I have one with kind of Bill Belichick and on the field. I have one with Bill Belichick off the field. I have one with Brady on the field and one with Brady and Moss. So I'll let you pick which one. I'm selecting it.
I want the Brady one. All of them.
I just don't want. I don't know how much time you have.
Oh well, it's up to you.
The floor is yours.
Oh, yeah, you get to do them all. Do them all.
Do them all. What's yours, man?
All right, so I'll go with the first one. It was early. I was in two camps with the Patriots, and I was able to be on their practice squad as well. But in one of the camps, actually, it might have even been off-season workout, like OTAs. They had a draft pick that was like a second rounder, same year as me. So I was there 2 years after I came out. So he was a couple of years in, still fast. He's from Florida. I can't even remember his name, Chad. Something, I can't remember. But anyways, he kept messing up, you know, like, and we're doing blitz practice, so, or blitz period, so, you know, they blitz on your side, you gotta adjust, you know, you gotta do a different route. He kept messing up, and you know, this is the ones, he's going with the ones, so Belichick, and this is something to teach all those future athletes that are gonna be, you know, on the field with you know, trying to make a team or whatever. Belichick goes, can I get somebody in here that knows what they're doing? And I didn't even think. I ran straight in there, got in the huddle, and then I get in the huddle, and I'm like, oh, shoot. I'm in here with Randy. I'm here with Tom. I'm like, you know, I'm used to going with, like, the second string, third string. I was like, F it, let's go. Yeah. And sure enough, we do the play. I run out there, and they blitz on my side. I do the adjustment, which was the adjustment was a slant. Tom hits me, and I take it to the house. Boom. So that's my
nice.
That's the one teaching moment. Something that I'll never forget, and that I tell my players now. Like, you got to take advantage of every opportunity you can get. Can't be scared. You know, it's gonna look. Even if I went in there and messed up, you know, you don't know until you try.
Right.
Right. So luckily I didn't. Luckily I did well. So you know, the next story is with Belichick. I got released. You know, they released me, and then they end up bringing me back practice squad. And I'm eating where the team eats, and Belichick walks in. I hopped right up, beelined right to him. Gave him the biggest, I'm pretty sure I caught him off guard. He was like, gave him the biggest, thank you for bringing me back. Like, after the fact, I was rolling, like, what was I thinking? Like, that might have been the first time someone hugged Belichick.
He went stiff as a board, didn't he? He didn't know what to do. He went stiff as a board, didn't he?
Yeah.
who's the OC look, when you were there?
He needed a hug.
Who's OC when you were there? Billy O?
So, no. So, well, actually, yeah. He ended up being the second season I was there. It was Josh McDaniels' first season I was there.
Wow.
Right. Which I loved. He actually liked me, which is why I think they kept bringing me back, you know.
You were Danny Amendola before Danny Amendola.
Yeah, he wasn't even there.
Right, right.
It was before Gronk. It was before all of them.
Right. You were like that kind of style. Like, you were that kind of player. And then later on.
Yeah, but see, they didn't use me like that, which is why I was a little, like, looking back, you know, now.
Yeah.
I would have stood up for myself and been like, hey, this is really what I'm really like a Wes Welker. I'm really like a Julian Edelman.
Yeah.
I really like that style, even though I'm bigger than them.
Yeah.
That's really my style, but they didn't use me like that. I was backing up Randy. Like,
oh,
okay. Come on now.
Yeah.
I'm not that guy. But I was just trying to get in where I fit in.
Hey, man, practice squad is serious. That is legit. Yeah. That is legit. Yeah. You made it, man. You made it.
Yeah, and that takes me to my next story with Tom. Tom goes, we're at practice, and, you know, we're just doing scout for the defense. This is actually in the playoffs. We're going in, and it was the year he came back. So the first year I was with them, that was the year he got hurt, knee injury. Second season I was there, he was back, but, you know, he's still working his way into it. And I don't know why we're just standing behind, and he goes, "Hey, Rob." I'm like, "What's up?" He goes, "Do you guys get paid the same as us in the playoffs?" I'm like, "Bro, what kind of question is that?" Like, why are you asking me that? I don't know. What do you get paid?
You tell me.
Yeah, what's your check looking like?
What's your check look like? Let's compare.
Exactly. Let's actually, I'm pretty sure I'm not making as much as you, so can you break me off a little something?
He's a big dude, too, right? He's a big dude.
What's
up? For a quarterback, he's a big guy.
Oh, yeah, he's tall. He's big. Yeah. And then my last story, which I'll never forget. You know, I tell people all the time, I don't know what it was, but Tom and Randy were like my biggest fans, and I have no idea why. But anytime I did anything, they were always cheering me on, like screaming my name across the field. And I'll never forget, there was one time we had with the Patriots, we had what was called Bill's YouTube. And this is when YouTube first came out. So it's Bill's YouTube, and it was when before every practice or any team meeting or whatever, he would start the meeting with some clips, like a handful of clips. And some of them were good, but most of them were not. So you never wanted to be on Bill's YouTube, right? And we had just played the Redskins, and it was preseason. We had just played the Redskins, and I was on one of the punt return teams, right? So I'm off the edge, coming off the edge. And so I come coming off the edge, and it's like a big, like fit DN, you know, like he looks like he could play either linebacker or DN, but he was big, and he grabbed me and just tossed me. I just flew. Whew. And so he kept rewinding it. Bill Belichick kept rewinding it. Like, this is what you don't do. Right. And I'm like, oh gosh, like he's really rewinding it over and over. You're just seeing me fly. And then he lets it play. And so I get thrown, but I hop. I just bounce right back up. Boom. And this boy that tossed me, he was not only big, but he was fast. So I'm running. And so I see what his lane is. So I'm like, okay, he's going out. So he's outside. So I'm going to come inside, and the return was actually to him. So I'm like, oh shoot. So I'm sprinting as fast as I can. Next thing you know, the returner's over there, and he sees me, right? And he sees my guy, and I'm just like, I just kind of give him one of these, and I like behind me, and I just came, and it's right when the dude came, I just like, wham! And I literally just took him out. And it was perfect, because now we went from, this is what you don't want to do, but if this does happen to you, this is what you're supposed to do. And he just kept rewinding it. Boom, boom. And me just taking him out. Bow, bow, bow. And sure enough, my two fans hyped me bigger than anything else. Tom and Randy. Randy used to sit right behind me. Tom used to sit right across the aisle from me, and they were just screaming, "Oh, Randy, okay, Ortiz, I see you, Ortiz." You know, and he just, so I always said, like, if I ever run into them, I want to, like, that's one question I would ask them, like, what, why were y'all so, like my fans? Like, I loved it. You made me walk with a little bit more, like, you know, confidence. But even the first time I was released, I said bye, you know, I make sure I say bye to everybody. I went up to him. Randy shook his hand. He's like, "You'll be back." And I'm like, "Okay, if you say so." So
wow, this is wild, man. Because you hear the stories about him like riding Edelman, and he like took a shine to you. That's kind of like that's something.
Yeah,
man.
But Edelman was the rook. my second season, Edelman was my roommate during camp and stuff. So Edelman, I loved him. I am so proud of him because, you know, what he was able to accomplish was crazy. And two, like, we'd be back at where we were living, and he'd be like, "Hey, man," he'd come to my room and be like, "Hey, man, you want to walk through some plays?" You know, we've been working all day. I'm like, "Bro, I'm chilling." I wish I would have got up and worked with him. Because then, you know, I don't know. Maybe I would have stayed longer. I don't know. But honestly, you know, Randy and all them, I mean, in the NFL period, if they like you, to be honest, they tend to interact with you. And sometimes it's, you know, a little hazy, you know. And Edelman will probably talk about those times. And I think I've seen the interview where he was talking about that. What is it called? An Edelnut or something
Edelnut,
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end of the day, like when people, if they ignore you, that's worse. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So regardless if they're hazing you a little bit or whatever, that just means to me, that just tells me they notice me. You know, I'm doing something. So
hell yeah.
That's my word to anybody that's getting hazed. I don't like getting hazed, but.
Yeah,
happens
sometimes
time.
It's part of it, right? Get you acclimated.
Yep.
Check out part two of our interview with Robert Ortiz later this week.
Step outside of your safe area and make a statement without saying much with FCK Clout Lifestyle Apparel. Embrace the colorful chaos and stay emotionally regulated in their graphic tees, hoodies, snapbacks, accessories, and more. Go to fckclout.com today and check out current season and past season merchandise for men and women. Get it while you can. That's fckclout.com. Check them out today. fckclout.com. Who's the best of the worst this week in sports? The Fade Store presents the Alleged Superstar of the Week Award.
All right, boys and girls, you know what time it is. It's time for the Alleged Superstar of the Week. You know how it goes. We put up a poll on our Instagram account at Fade Rob Podcast, and you vote. And you vote, and you vote, and you vote. And the winner of said vote gets a shout out on this year's show and takes home the coveted ass trophy. And do you know who took home the coveted ass trophy, D?
I don't.
That'd be Tyler Hero, surprisingly. It's like, man, you got punched in the face. Why'd you get punched in the face? Because you're not a likable fella.
You're not a likable fella.
You're not a likable fella. You're kind of an asshole, apparently. You're kind of apparently a Fugazi tough guy. As Tim Thomas once said.
Easy, Fugazi. Ooh.
It's a woozy. It's a wazzy. It's a fairy dust. It doesn't exist. Like Tyler Hero's jaw. It doesn't exist. But that was last week. This is this week. Who are your nominees for Alleged Superstar of the Week? Dude.
Okay. Let's see. Where is my list? Where is my list? Do-do-do-do-do. Woo.
Yes. All right. First up on my list, I have Argentina. You get all the way to the World Cup final, and you can't even get a shot or a shot on goal in regulation against Spain. You're the defending World Cup champions. You have Lionel Messi, arguably the best soccer player ever, definitely of this generation. And we can't get him the ball. We can't get him in position to score. Argentina, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Number two, I'm choosing FIFA. Yeah, FIFA, for choosing the shithole that is MetLife Stadium to produce the final for the World Cup.
That field was in such terrible shape. It's in the swamps of Jersey. You had people running across the freeway trying to get to the game. Awful selection, awful venue. Do better, just do better. And last but not least, I have New York Yankees pitcher Cam Schittler, who threw 98 pitches across 4 1/3 innings against the Dodgers to a loss. And he's supposed to be their future. He's supposed to be the guy who gets the ball in Game 3 of the World Series at home. He's supposed to be the next big thing, and he can't get out of the fourth inning against the Dodgers. Cam Schittler, you on my Legend Superstar of the Week. What do you got, Z?
All good choices. I'm going to piggyback off your Argentina choice, and I'm going to talk about Leandro Paredes and Enzo Fernandez. So, let's start in order. Enzo Fernandez getting his second yellow for that overly aggressive tackle on Pauco Barsi when he was already on a yellow for mouthing off to the official, leading to a red card in the worst possible fucking time, because the game went to extra time. So your team is now down a man for 30 minutes. It took Spain all of 39 seconds to put the ball in the back of the net. That's the level of thought on Enzo Fernandez's part. And then Leandro Paredes, post-match, grabs Spain's Eric Garcia by the throat, sparking a brawl. And now FIFA is investigating this, plus a coach. What are we doing here? We've completely lost the plot here. Win with grace, lose with grace. Be a sportsman, don't be an asshole. Enzo Fernandez, Leandro Paredes, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Number two, Toronto Tempo head coach Sandy Brundello suspended one game for her comment regarding Angel Reese in the Atlanta Dream's 112-92 win over the Tempo, referring to Reese as a protected species. I'm just going to let that hang out there for a second. Could you say anything worse than what you just said right there? There are ways to say that Angel Reese is protected by the refs without using that verbiage. That's a dog whistle right there. That is a dog whistle comment. And, you know, if you didn't mean it that way, it sure as shit sounded like you did. Sandy Brundello, you are my alleged superstar of the week. And number three, Cam Scataboo, coming back from leg surgery, doing a backflip, not sticking the landing, slipping, and then just doubling down on it. It's just me. It's just who I am. It is what I do. Oh, good. Oh, good. This is what we have to look forward to as Giant fans. Cam Scataboo, I need you to start thinking, buddy. Start using your head. That's that lump that's 3 feet above your ass. Start doing that. Cam Scataboo, you are my alleged superstar of the week. And a bonus honorable mention to Adam Silver, putting the entire NBA scheduling process on hold because LeBron has not picked his team yet. What the fuck are you doing? No man is above the league. At least not now. Especially not 42-year-old LeBron James at this point in his career. Maybe 10 years ago when he was 32. Maybe he was 25, 26. Not now. Not now. Get your shit together, Adam. Adam Silver, you are my alleged superstar of the week. I think we said our piece. Go to our Instagram poll at Phaedra Podcast and vote. And vote, and vote, and vote. And for our nominees.
You're better than that. Just do better. Just do better.
This has been the Fade Route with DNZ. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Catch our podcast on Wednesday nights on Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to your podcast. So until next time, stay fade, everyone.
Time for us to run the go route. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you liked what you heard and you want to hear more, be sure to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a review, rate us 5 stars, turn on subscription notifications, and share on social media. Tell your friends and spread the word.